Hey kids, guess who came back with a new episode? Wow. I'm recording this one very early because, I've got my dates confused. Oh god, I don't actually have to record this early, but I'm gonna do it anyway because hey, yay, productivity. Well, anyway, we should get on with the episode. I am a princess, playing solitaire in solitude, up 15 flights of stairs, hidden behind bricks and an overprotective dragon. I call out to my only companion, watching her scale the walls and sitting down, her wings making the wind rush as they settle around her. Up she looks, glassy, golden eyes full of sympathy. Honestly, I wonder sometimes if she was always inside of me, forced out by my body and soul to guard the gates, or if I, from desperation and in very dramatic fashion, manifested her from my mind into the sky. She's chewing on this guy that she found earlier in the day, approaching the gates. It's really too late for me to consider if I even wanted to be rescued this time, and which of the two, the misguided man or the defensive dragon, I wanted to save me. I wear a choker of men's fingers, decorated with broken vows to be gentle and different. I sleep at night held by ghosts who won't let go, so you'll understand why I don't like visitors. It's funny to think that so many dawdle towards death in an unwanted attempt to save me from the safety of the prison I sentenced myself to. Perhaps being human barbecue is a little bit harsh for a misguided man who was hoping to help. So, in the interest of kindness and to add some variety to my dragon's diet, I shot the last one with a flurry of arrows before he even made it to the gate, and I ordered Nando's delivered by drone. Can you tell that I watched like all of Game of Thrones in like a month? Because I've been thinking about dragons a lot. I think dragons are pretty fucking cool. If anyone knows somebody that can get me a dragon, hook me up, because it would be very rad. I would love that. I was kind of, I don't really remember what I was doing. Probably watching Game of Thrones, I don't know. But I just had this idea of, you know how there's this sort of everlasting image of this, you know, damsel in distress, princess locked away in a tower, needs a man, a prince, whatever, to come and rescue her, right? So I had some thoughts and I was like, okay, so what if she doesn't want to be rescued? What if she's fine just hanging out where she is, right? And then what if there is a dragon, right? That's like there to kind of keep people out. But then she's not sure if she wants to keep people out anymore. Maybe she wants to let people in, but she's afraid and, you know. So it just kind of all became this, you know, everybody dies except me and my dragon. And I'm not sure if that was by design or not, kind of scenario. It should be noted, I do not execute everybody that attempts to come to my house. Because, you know, as I may have mentioned before, I am a guardian reading pacifist, so it's just not really going to happen. I wouldn't even know how to kill somebody, to be honest. I wonder if there's a YouTube tutorial for that. Oh god, I'm going to end up on a list at the Home Office. Oh, that's fine. It's fine. If all the, you know, weird documentaries and things I've Googled haven't put me there already, they're not going to bother from that. Don't worry. lips on our feminist features, barely even a kiss, but it's enough to convince them that they're solid in their solidarity. Everybody says I'm a good girl, until they notice I've been seen in Notting Hill a little too often and a little too late at night. I make history just by falling in love, but love is a triviality that blackens your image irredeemably, apparently. So, I had a bit of a rant about the Labour Party on the last episode, so I'm not going to do that again today because I have broken my Labour voting grandfather's heart enough this month. I'm kidding. But what I will just say is that I guess when I wrote that poem, I was feeling some type of way about the fact that a party that centres its entire value system around solidarity and fighting inequality allowed for a woman to be deselected because she was a lesbian and a feminist. I just find that so interesting. Let's just say that. Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. If my granddad is listening, firstly, stop, because I feel like that would be weird. But I don't hate the Labour Party, you know that. I just find myself being disappointed in them, perhaps because I hold them to a higher standard, because their whole deal is being about making things better for everyone. So I guess I hold them to that higher standard. But anyway, I think the message that we really should take away from Pride Month is that it's not about covering everything with rainbows, and it's not about saying love is love over and over again. It's about the solidarity and being there for people when it actually counts. When somebody actually needs you, you know, having a bag for life with a rainbow on it isn't going to help somebody in the event of a homophobic hate crime, you know. You know, some tweet that says love is love with a stock photo of you know, a pride flag isn't going to help somebody who's being discriminated at their workplace because of their gender identity. You know what I mean? I just wish that specifically, like, brands and groups and companies and organizations, I don't know, I wish maybe they could do more than just the standard public relations, you know, hashtag love is love, hashtag be yourself, whatever. Like, I mean, we've had several decades on this. Like, you'd think that they could learn to get better at it. Like, even if they don't really care, you think they'd be able to pretend a little bit more convincingly that they do. I don't know. I once heard Europe's favourite bisexual, apart from myself, obviously, Mr. Patrick fucking Harvey, king of the climate change debate, well-respected recycler, and the only member of the Scottish Parliament that Donald Trump truly fears. I heard him state, perhaps I'm paraphrasing, that it was time to be far less tolerant of intolerance. It's hard to disagree when you consider that nobody ever died from being told to stop calling someone a queer, But we've lost too many of our family, expired in an avalanche that built day by day. Why does it have to be like that? Why do we accept that our souls must be sacrificed for the sake of a homophobe's freedom? Why do we watch each generation falling as the hatred hurtles through the rainbow that they wrap themselves in? How can we let another generation go through what we went through? Patrick fucking Harvey is both environmentally friendly and correct. It is time to be less tolerant of intolerance, because the kids deserve better than this. Imagine not liking Patrick Harvey. Like, can't relate. Anyway, if you guys don't know who he is, you should definitely look him up. He is one of the leaders of the Green Party in Scotland, because they have two leaders, because that's very cool. And he's a great public speaker, and he talks a lot about a lot of things. But the one thing that's always struck me is when it was during a debate on an LGBT issue, and he did say, again, I'm probably paraphrasing, but he said that it was time to be less tolerant of intolerance. And I just remember thinking that it was such a moment for somebody with a platform like that to just openly say it, and to just be like, you know what, it's time. And I was like, yes, bitch, it is. Yes. Okay. You know, it was great. And I think he has a very good point, because, I mean, not to be a bitch about it, but I'm going to be a bitch about it. I just find it really funny that my generation is the one that gets this label of being sensitive and whiny and, you know, a buzzkill. And it's like, but you're the one over here whining because you're not allowed to say certain horrible words anymore. Like, does it really affect your life? You know? Is being nice to people really quite challenging for you? You know? Do you get like this kind of weird rash on your skin if you respect what somebody would like to be called and what they would not like to be called? Like, what happens? You know, what is so bad about being nice to others? I don't understand. But there's some people who do have problems with that, and I'm like, why? You know, it's cheap, it's easy, it's free, it's environmentally friendly, because let's not forget that the planet is dying. So I don't get what the resistance is, you know. I mean, is the whole world really gonna fall down if you stop saying mean things about black people? No, it's not. The world will be fine. You will just be a more pleasant person, and you will find that probably more people like to be around you, and you'll be happier. I'm not seeing a negative, to be honest. You know, I'm not seeing it. I mean, you know, what happens if you stop acting like you're better than a gay person because you're straight? Literally nothing. Like, nothing happens. You just become happier, I guess, because you're not spending all this time and energy being mean to a person who's done nothing wrong to you. You know? I'm just thinking about it. I mean, some of these people, they get really angry. There are like people who have like whole Twitter accounts just to be angry about like gay people or trans people or immigration or something. And these people are updating like 10, 15 times a day. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's a unique thing, isn't it? So it's a hobby, it's a choice, I guess. But I don't understand that. And I don't understand, you know, why they can see being asked, you know, okay, so I don't like when you call me this, can you not call me it anymore? I don't get why that's a buzzkill, but not repeatedly being quite mean-spirited to somebody is not a buzzkill. Like, I just, it's real funny, you know, how these things happen. That's interesting. It's very cute. Anyways, recycle if you can. Maybe consider metal straws that are reusable. And when you're out, if you see rubbish on the floor, maybe pick it up and put it in the bin. And adopt animals. Yes. Okay, so I just want to say real quick in response to something. I read a poem a couple weeks ago that was called Margaret Thatcher Has an Inalienable Right to Shut the Fuck Up. I got some emails and some social media comments and things like that about it. So I just wanted to address that with you guys. There were some people who thought that I should not have done that, because some people thought that it was disrespectful because she was the prime minister at one point. I don't vote for her, so don't take that up with me. And some people because she is no longer alive. Should point out that one has nothing to do with me. So I don't get why anyone's getting an attitude with me over that. But, okay, I'm being pedantic. I know that they didn't mean that I had anything to do with it. I know that they're saying I should respect her because she's no longer here to defend herself and yada, yada, yada. But I also got a lot more messages and comments and emails from people who had been through difficulties accepting who they were, discovering who they were because of things like her actions, but also people who were inspired by her government and by the things that she said as a person, and then went on to attack and oppress LGBT people. And so I just wanted to say that I stand by everything I said. I do. I think that she was wrong to say what she did. I think she was wrong to push so much anti-LGBT sentiment. I think that she was wrong to try and argue that LGBT people didn't deserve the same rights as straight people, and that children didn't have an inalienable right to be gay, because you know what? Regardless of human rights, that shit isn't going to change. And the sooner that these people accept that and deal with it, the happier everyone's going to be. So just for the avoidance of doubt, I stand by that work. I am proud of that work. And Margaret Thatcher still has an inalienable right to shut the fuck up, as does the rest of her party, what's left of it anyway. And anybody who thinks that they get to tell LGBT people that we shouldn't have the same rights as everyone else. So thank you for that. Thank you for your emails and your comments. I'm glad we had this talk. It is 4 a.m. and once again, you are camped out on the bathroom floor as I educate the bubbles about all that bothers me. My hand is held as I hold your attention with my endless anxious monologues, hoping aloud that my autopsy pics will be aesthetically pleasing, made for morbid mood boards in soft shades played on YouTube, with a content warning and a cool soundtrack. I hope my mother doesn't cry too much when I'm not around to disappoint her. I have lived in her eyes, running away in the rushing rivers that leave her red and despondent. I ask aloud, shaking, if you enjoy being in love with a dying girl. My hand is held, as is my breath, and you, a non-believer, are next to me, on your knees, praying to a goddess who doesn't know how to be worshipped. Suddenly, I feel I could fight death for the rest of my life. I was actually in the bath when I wrote that. I do a lot of writing in the bath because it's very relaxing and, you know, I get to feel like a water baby and it's really fun. So I guess I just get really inspired when I'm like in the water, I guess. I was kind of thinking about, you know, what people believe and what people hold on to, and I guess the concept of faith, as it were. I mean, I have what I believe, and, you know, it's not like a super serious thing. Like, I consider it to be quite a fun, kind of playful, loving thing. I know that for some people, what they believe in, it's quite a serious, you know, almost like they're afraid of what they believe, you know. But for me, I feel like it's, you know, based around love, you know, because I mean, that's just how I am. But I know that, you know, contrary to what a lot of people will tell you, a lot of places are becoming sort of less and less attached to, I guess, religion and spirituality as a thing. For example, the UK is kind of, I think a lot of people from the outside count us as like a Christian country. I know the government does and the royal family or whatever. But if you ask a lot of people, a lot of them don't really believe in anything, you know, which is fine. But I just find it funny how, you know, how everybody, you know, sort of gets the idea that everyone is. But I mean, as someone who is, you know, I often used to think about kind of what it would be like not to have that, to not have, you know, something to believe in, to not have something to sort of think about. And, you know, and I mean, maybe I'm not any closer to understanding it now. but I guess I think maybe, you know, there are other things in their lives that they have those kinds of relationships with. And I started to realize, well, so do I. I have things in my life that are not connected to my religion or my spirituality or whatever, that, you know, that are important parts of who I am and are just as valid and real and essential to me as my, you know, relationship with my religion. So this is probably like coming across like really like, you know, the more you know, but I mean, because I think sometimes the major conflict between religious people and non-religious people is that both sides kind of get this whole superiority thing going on. Like, you know, religious people will be like, oh, they have nothing in their lives because they don't have religion, and oh, they must be so lonely. Like, obviously not all of them think this or say this, but you know, I'm just talking about like the parts that do actually have these arguments, you know. And then the side that doesn't have those things will be like, you know, I'm smarter than them because I'm not believing in this stupid thing that's not real or whatever. And I think maybe if we connected over the things that we do share, you know, the things that are universal, maybe things would be better. I don't know. You know, we all fall in love, we all feel happiness, sadness, whatever, you know. Maybe we're not so different after all. And that brings us to the end of the episode. I'll be back next week. But before that, you can find more information about me on my website, which is jenniferwan.com. I'm on social media with the username Miss J Squared on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find my videos on YouTube and music and stuff on Spotify and Apple Music and iTunes and things like that. I will be performing next Saturday at the Leamington Poetry Festival. You can find more information about that, and I think there may be a few tickets left. I don't think there's many as far as I know, but you can find the details about that in the description or on my website. I have a new kind of mini collection available on my website at the moment. It's called Virgin Vogue, and I wrote it. I think I've talked about this during this episode, actually. It's a celebration of LGBT history and culture that I wrote to celebrate Pride Month and the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. So you can find that on my website too. And it's completely free, because unlike most brands and corporations, I'm not out of here. You know, I'm out here trying to make money from the LGBT community, because, you know, I understand that, you know, Pride is a protest, not a party. It's not a advertising opportunity. It's our fucking real lives. Anyway, so you can find that on my website. Thank you to my friend Amanda from Patreon, who I love very much, very dearly. I actually, speaking of Patreon, I have a special offer coming up on my
on my Patreon, but I will tell you more about that on the next episode, because I think by then it would have started. So if you were interested in joining my Patreon, or the early release program, the details for that are on my website as well. And you can get lots of exclusive content, early content, free content that's normally paid content, you know, all that good stuff. So, but yeah, the details about that are on my website. And I will see you next week. Good night, my love.